Hi, Joe.
Hi, Cody. How are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm a little sick, but I'm here for Diagnostics and Usage, episode number 17.
You're a champion, man. You're powering through the sickness for our listeners, and I'm sure they are grateful for that. So let's go right into follow-up. Forstall, once he gets in the news, he doesn't want to leave. This guy is now, he's a news hog. So, following the leaked story of him being a Snapchat visor and then his first tweet, he has now had his first interview, with the Wall Street Journal about the new Broadway play Fun Home that he produced. Now, did you read this article, Cody?
No, but I read the quote where he was like, yeah, Apple, cool.
That is not even like the, I mean, obviously all the Mac rumors and all them, they picked that up because that was seriously the most like, wow, they still paid me a ton of money, so I can't say anything bad. But there was a couple interesting tidbits in there, besides the Apple quote. So it's funny. The reason him and his wife have the title producer is because they wrote the biggest check. So essentially the person who, let me rewind. The drummer of Metallica, Lars Ulrich, he's at his 50th birthday party or something like that, which is odd to begin with because I wouldn't be able to do 6 degrees of separation and how Scott Forstall gets to the drummer of Metallica's home for a birthday party. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just seems a little odd, but I don't know. It must have been a big party. But essentially, he's there. He gets to talking with the person who, I guess, wrote this script, and he starts talking, how about he's always loved theater. And then this person, gives him the script. He basically is like, let me write you a check. And he pulled out his checkbook, and it's funny, they asked him in the interview how much he paid, and of course he was like, I'd rather not say. But it's obviously it has to be almost the entire budget because he's listed as like the top producer. And then the other thing that was interesting was, they asked him again, like, what has he been doing since he's left Apple? He gave the same kind of like canned answer. Like, I've been doing, what's the word I'm looking for?
Philanthropical
work. And he's been an advisor to big tech companies. And then they asked him about the Snapchat thing. And of course he's like, oh, I can't comment on it. But like, why can't he comment on it? It's starting to not make any sense. Like, A, it already leaked out from the Sony leaks. And B, it's Snapchat's, they're not a public company. I understand they don't have to they don't have to give information to their investors, but how does this hurt them at all? One of them confirming that he was an advisor to Snapchat.
I can't think of anything. I don't know. It's just their political MO.
Yeah, it's just weird. So another thing is he's kind of taking over this play's like technology presence when it comes to like either social media, and like he's trying to go to great lengths to get a mini cell tower in the lobby of the theater so that people can tweet and stuff like that, in the lobby, but then once they get in the theater, the service cuts out. Like, it's funny. Like, he's really into this play, and he's, he may have not, contributed to the music or the script or anything like that, but he seems to be involved. So,
did you go see it?
Am I going to see it? Probably not. Take us into topic number one, Cody, because we had a lot of things happen this week.
We did. Topic number one, Verizon is paying a lot of money for, well, not in their terms, but $4.4 billion for AOL, which includes their dial-up services that people still pay for.
Listen, like with this whole Forstall thing, I did not see this coming, acquisition. And it's interesting, in the press release from both companies, like Verizon's main goal for, you know, is to acquire their like video technology and their video presence.
Ads.
Yeah, and yeah, obviously advertisements, but it, I don't know. I feel like they're holding something back. I think Verizon has something bigger planned in the works.
I mean, AOL's been making a big push into mobile and mobile advertising, and Verizon runs a cell phone company. So I think it's a perfect match for just business-wise for them to kind of collaborate together and be able to kind of, they probably both have similar goals and what they want to do, and they'll be able to do it now that they're kind of, they're in the same and they don't have to cross corporate boundaries to like work together. They are just now one and the same. And Verizon's going to be now Verizon knows where, what websites you're visiting because it goes through their network, and now they can know what ads to show you.
And the bigger question here that people have been raising is, you know, AOL owns TechCrunch and Gadget and the Huffington Post. And it doesn't appear that Verizon acquired them, you know, to acquire these media companies. So, A, the question that people are posing is, how are these people, how are these outlets going to stay, you know, journalistically independent, and, you know, maintain that, you know, their, I would say, neutral judgment when it comes to, you know, talking about products. And B, is Verizon just thinking about dumping them off to another company soon? Because there was one particular outlet, I think it was Recode, who said that there was like a German company that they may have been talking to take the media outlets. I'm almost for Plan B. I'd rather them just cut loose. I just don't want them to shut these places down, and I think that's a little far fetched.
I think that it would be stupid for Verizon to kind of manage the content that they're producing. I mean, if they're going to be creating an ads business with this AOL acquisition, those ads will be served on those websites. And then that's, you know, pure profit for them for running their own ads through their own sites. They, you know, there's no middleman there. So I think it would be stupid for them to kind of manage what those sites are saying. And I think it would be dumb to get rid of these sites. Just keep them and kind of let them run and do their own thing and self-manage. And it's just money coming in the door. Have you seen the new Facebook Instant articles?
So I'm boycotting Instant articles right now.
You're boycotting
currently
them.
Meaning I haven't, I mean, I've obviously seen videos and I've watched many people browse through them. But I find it rather absurd that Facebook would only bring instant articles, which has a paper design, only in the official Facebook app and not in the paper app for iOS.
Hey, that's how they do it. That's Facebook always does that.
Instant articles matches the paper app's design language and everything perfectly. So, you know, if this was, and this was also a back end change because there was no Facebook app update the day Instant Articles launched. So if this was like a back end web change, why couldn't they push this to not only Facebook, but to the paper app? And you got me hooked on the paper app, Cody. It was you who sold me this app because it had Messenger and Facebook combined in one. And, you know,
I haven't been using the Facebook Instant Articles. The technology is really cool, and I really want to use it, but I don't want to go into Facebook to use it.
Well, I think Twitter's going to copy this ASAP, in my opinion.
If they can. I mean, I think Facebook would be really smart to, just like they took Messenger out of Facebook, take articles out of Facebook and make it a standalone and make a Facebook newsreader. I would be more inclined to use that than I would to go into my Facebook news feed and see a mix of news articles that I want to read combined with updates and pictures from my friends. I think for me, I make a division between those two things, and Facebook is trying to merge them, and I don't really like that.
So, you know, all joking aside on my end, the instant articles premise is very interesting. So right now they have about, I don't know, 6 or 7 partners, you know, BuzzFeed and New York Times being the most, and National Geographic being the most, you know, notable ones. But one thing that I did not realize until it launched was this doesn't mean that everything that BuzzFeed and New York Times posts to their Facebook page will immediately turn into instant articles. So this requires some extra special care. I'm pretty sure Facebook has a special publisher's CMS where they have to go in there and lay it out the way they like it and add their ads the way they like it. There's only a handful of ads, right? I mean, there's only a handful of instant articles. If you do have the Facebook app and you want to just get, you know, a taste of instant articles, if you search for the instant articles Facebook page, they've posted all the different, you know, links to articles. But again, it's only a handful. And another thing that is interesting is they are allowing publishers to place their own ads and retain 100% of the revenue from those ad clicks. Or if you do not want to be bothered with laying out ads, you can have Facebook put ads in there and Facebook takes a 30% cut. Now, I wrote about this a day or two ago, and I think that this current policy is fantastic. The publishers get to choose to, you know, keep all their money if they want, or they can, you know, give the reins to Facebook. But I'm just hoping that Facebook doesn't change their mind in the future, because if Facebook starts kind of tying these publishers' hands and saying, well, we want to cut no matter what, I think that, you know, publishers will be less inclined to sign up. But from what I can see, it's a gorgeous layout. I mean, the typography is amazing, and then the way you interact with videos and photos, it's very paper like.
Have you used the New York Times Now app?
So I have, and that is a testament to the New York Times trying to stay relevant. And you know, the New York Times is an institution, but on the other hand, they've had tough times. So I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary Page One Inside the New York Times, but it was a documentary that came out in 2011, and it was showing, you know, they were struggling in 2009 and 2010, and you know, people weren't picking up the paper, and you know, someone like my age and your age, I don't know about you, but I never picked up the New York Times like physically, like a physical copy. It just wasn't, you know, it wasn't ingrained in me because, you know.
You know what's really funny is about 3 weeks ago, I started picking up the New York Times every morning, and I've been reading it every day for about 3 weeks now.
But it's interesting though, because we grew up in a time where once we were old enough to care about the news, we had it online and free, readily available on multiple outlets. So, you know, a generation before us, they were accustomed to picking up some type of paper. It doesn't have to be the New York Times, but picking up a paper somewhere or a magazine somewhere to learn about stuff. So, you know, when we were growing up, it just wasn't something that was instilled. Or, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but at least for me.
Actually in New York, when I lived in New York, I would always get the little, you know, subway paper, just to kind of have a quick read on the train, and to do the crossword, to try and make myself, you know, feel intelligent. I have had a problem with the actual New York Times app. You know, that is the newspaper that's in the newsstand. I don't really enjoy. I don't like the layout and how they section things. In the New York Times app, everything is very much kind of by genre, or section. So you have to go there. There really isn't a, like, this is what's happening now, these are the important stories. There isn't a front page, really. But that's what I really like about the New York Times Now app, is it is chronologically what is happening right now, and here are the news. I really like how they have developing and on certain stories to know that they're like updating news as they're getting information about it. I like that they have quick reads, and I can see just all the top news stories, a couple sentences about it, and then if I want to read about it, I can. The only problem I've had with the New York Times Now app is that since I have the New York Times Now app and the New York Times app in Newsstand, I get the same notification twice. And I got that a few times before. It drove me crazy, and I had to go in and turn off notifications.
So I think you hit the nail on the head on a couple of things. So the Newsstand app, you know, no one wants to hunt and peck through different categories, and then once they get into a category, find what's interested, you know, what they're interested in. I mean, maybe some people do, but I don't like to find my news that way. And then the other thing is Newsstand in general, you know, unless you're someone who is subscribing to a ton of things in Newsstand, my Newsstand is buried inside of a folder at the end of my home screen. I mean, I'll spotlight into it every once in a blue to, you know, for a couple of things that I've, you know, purchased. It's just not front and center. Before I get into, you know, why I like the app, back to the New York Times, they struggled, and then they were one of the first people to adopt the iPad when the iPad was released in 2011, and they were pretty successful. The thing was, is subscriber numbers leveled out, and you know, people they've realized that, you know, as people get older and as these generations get older, they're not going to want to consume the news in the way that they consumed it 15 years ago. The one barrier for the New York Times was that it was a paid subscription. I would read certain New York Times articles from authors that I, you know, admired from time to time. So when Pogue was there, and then, you know, Nick Bilton and the late David Carr, and, you know, these were authors that I would, you know, find links through Twitter. But I never kind of read the Times, you know, front to back or anything right, like that. But now, I found out about this app. I found out that it was free. You know, at that point, I was like, let me give this a shot. And I'm so pleasantly surprised, because I aggregate my news through Twitter, but I will say I don't really get a lot of world news. There's not many of my followers tweeting world news and such like that. I usually am, you know, looking at the tech and entertainment space and stuff like that. So, you know, when I got this app, the first thing I picked up my phone the first thing I saw, I downloaded the app, and literally 30 minutes later, I get a breaking news push notification about the Amtrak crash that happened in Philadelphia. I wanted to learn more about it. As soon as I got that push notification, I was investigating. You know, I wasn't on Twitter, so I didn't see the tweets go by. And then the next thing that I loved is the next morning I wake up and it says your morning digest is, you know, ready to go. And it was great. I flipped it open. They weren't very long articles, but I got information about not only what was going on in the world, but the stock market, news, sports, and I found it to be delightful, and I'm going to continue using it.
Yeah, I think the New York Times Now app is great. I think they got their game together. I think making it free and making the articles available to read was a great move for them to be able to pull people who normally wouldn't read the like long form articles. It pulls them into the kind of New York Times universe, which really it is. I mean, they have the print edition, they have the Sunday edition, which has, you know, the New York Times Magazine in it, and then they have the Newsstand edition, they have the website, they have all of these products. But I think the New York Times Now app really is the product that kind of speaks to our generation. I mean, you people like us, we we got our news from Twitter, right? You and I,
exactly.
Twitter is a main source of news, and they have developed their stories in a way where they put a really beautiful photo and then a sentence or two below it to describe what's going on. And then if I want to read more about it, I can tap into it. And just like Facebook instant articles, they load instantly. There's no waiting. And I think they have got it down with the New York Times Now app. The only thing is generating revenue off of it since that they've gone free. And I don't know if it's a kind of...
Well, it's free. All right. I was reading up on it. It is obviously free, but the articles are curated. So you're not...
Yes.
Able to find every article, but like you said, I like the option where I get a summary, and if it's not something that I'm, you know, something that, oh great, I learned about this but I don't want to learn any more about it, I can just skip over to the next one. I think that New York Times also partnering with its instant articles, they make all their money there. I mean, Facebook is a monster. I mean, it's literally billions of people are using that app. So if New York Times can place their ads within the instant articles there, I think they have a better chance of getting revenue through instant articles. I think New York Times Now, though, is going to get people hooked, and it's going to get people into these, you know, people are going to see the value of it, and then they might, you know, grow accustomed to a particular writer, and then they may get them to subscribe. Or, you know, there are going to be some complacent people who enjoy it. Like right now, I don't think I'm looking to subscribe. But again, I've only had the app for a couple of days, so it kind of remains to be seen. But they're on the right track. I think New York Times is – they are doing everything they can to not shut down.
I think they've done a good job here.
Absolutely.
And I want to see their next step and how they kind of extend this model to the rest of their universe of products. The thing I'm most proud of, 1Password integration.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Oh, I don't have a subscription. Oh, so when you're in the New York Times Now app, you can sign in with 1Password?
Yeah, and then that way if you save articles, like if you don't want to read the article, you can save it for later with a little like bookmark thing, but you need an account for that.
Yeah, I've been saving them to Instapaper. I'm glad that they support that. Apple Music, so you know I have Apple Pay,
yes,
and Apple Watch, and
Apple Music.
Apparently it's going to be called Apple Music, and apparently they are going to raise something from deep under the grave, a Ping-like service. You remember Ping?
I do remember Ping.
I remember using Ping, and...
I remember using Ping for 5 minutes, and then I stopped using Ping.
I followed a couple artists, and then I was like, what am I doing? Why am I on iTunes, this clunky piece of crap, and it's taking, you know, forever to load these different artists' page. I mean, Ping, I mean, who knows? Maybe Ping was a little ahead of its time, and they're going to resurrect it. Obviously, they're not going to call it Ping, because that has a, you know, negative connotation from the failure. But I feel like they could bring it back, and it could be something clever.
So I think they've already kind of set this up. If you go to your music app and you open up artists, there's artwork for each artist that is not the album cover that it used to be. Like, it is, I assume, set by the artist and managed by them, because I see, you know, that the photos for artists will change every once in a while of certain artists. They'll update it to a new photo. And I think that is kind of the type of thing that we'll see from this new Ping-like social network. Is just, it will just be completely, it won't be separate like Ping was. Ping was kind of this, it was... You could get to it, but I don't really feel like it was integrated as it needed to be. And I think with the new music app, they could do some subtle integrations like artist artwork or showing, I don't know, their last tweet. I don't know. They could, if they're subtle about it, I think it will work. And if it isn't defined as its own thing like Ping was, but it's just really well integrated information about the artists into the music that you're listening to, I think it'll be great.
Yeah, it's all about integration and also exclusives. Like, you know, once they get the artists on board, they need to do more exclusives, whether even that's a week exclusive where they get an album early or
they
get...
Well, they do that with radio now.
With iTunes Radio? Well, yeah. Yes, they'll do like first album listens and such. But
yeah.
I mean, you say you go to an artist's page and, you know, they have integrated where you see the tour dates. You can, you know, pop up Ticketmaster within the music app. It doesn't take you out of the app, and you can
buy with tickets. Apple Pay.
Exactly. And then, yeah, like you said, you could see their latest social media photos and, you know, all of these different things, and they're keeping you within the music app, and, you know, they're recommending other artists in turn. I think that they could be pretty successful. I think that they are betting big on the music app this year. It's going to have a lot of integration, and it's scaring companies. Did you hear about Ardio?
No.
So Ardio is launching a even lower tier. So right now they have the usual, I believe, $9.99 tier that you see everywhere, but they're launching a $3.99 tier. Because they don't want to go free, because, you know, Taylor Swift drops anyone who goes free, like they dropped Spotify and such. So Ardio, $3.99, what it gets you is it gets you a iTunes Radio / Pandora like thing, but it gets you unlimited skips, no advertisements. But what also the $3.99 gets you is, it's a little interesting, you're allowed to download 25 songs offline per day.
The 25 songs that you download, are they still there tomorrow?
Well, that was the question. So, I had a couple questions. Is it just those 25 songs you have access to, or you could still stream everyone else's song? Because it doesn't seem that way. I think it's you either get the radio feature, like the Pandora feature, or and you get access to 25 songs per day. And I believe the way I read it is like, yeah, the next day, if those 25 songs are still there, you can remove and add what you want, but it just cannot exceed 25 songs.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know how successful they're going to be, but it's just a testament to, you know, them trying to, you know, pivot and try new things, because they know this Apple Music is on the horizon. I mean, it's happening. There's no doubt about it. I you know, there's been so many rumors, and you know, people from the music industry are leaking things out. So,
well, I mean, since Ping, in addition to something like Ardio, there's tons of apps that came out after Ping of like, follow this band and we'll send you a push notification of when they are in town for a concert, or, you know, things like that. There's a bunch of apps, and that's pretty much what Ping did. It just didn't do it well enough and wasn't integrated and didn't have really the mobile platform and kind of just opportunity that I think would be great now. And if we'll just see if they can rise from the grave and pull it off this time, and have something better than Ping.
Yeah, and then, you know, this is something that we're most likely going to see announced in WWDC. But I wanted to skip a little bit ahead of WWDC and talk about what could be happening in September, because just recently, one of you know, these Apple analysts who are generally pretty, they have a pretty good track record when it comes to predicting things. So the analyst's name is Ming Chi Kuo, if I'm pronouncing that in any at all correct. This particular analyst had a number of predictions about what we may see for the 6S. I'm just going to call
it the 6S. Are you going to get the
6S? I don't think so.
Are you going to hold on for 2 years, or are you going to upgrade?
I think I'm going to hold on for 2 years. But, I mean, that might not be the case. You know.
I think it depends on form factor for me. And if they just upgrade the camera, then I don't care.
So let's go through this. Let's go through this list. So the thing about these analysts is a couple of these things that he quote-unquote predicted, was kind of already in the tea leaves, so to speak, yeah. and anybody could predict. But there was a couple that were pretty good. So number one on the list was Force Touch, which is kind of like, duh. You know, it's the natural progression. Bring Force Touch to it. Although, I don't know. I thought they were going to bring it to the iPad first and maybe skip the iPhone and bring it to the iPhone 7, but, you know, I guess that doesn't make any sense. If you have the technology ready, you might as well debut it. The next thing was definitely no 4-inch model, they're saying. So there was some rumors.
Get like bigger hands, everyone.
We talked about it. There was a 6SC case or a 6C casing or something like that. The analyst is saying no 4-inch model. And I don't know if you've been seeing this tweet that's been going around. It's this little clever animation, like the progression of cell phones, and it shows like the Zach Morris phone, and then it goes all the way down to like the Razr, and then it goes all the way back up to the 6 Plus. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going around Twitter. Who knows? You may have been the person who retweeted it. I don't know. We might eventually, that downward progression is going to happen where people are going to start wanting the smaller phone. But I agree. I don't think it's time to bring back the 4-inch because that makes people think, you know, oh, wow, we kind of screwed up here. We should bring it back this soon.
I'm going to go on like a little tangent here. I think that phones at this size, the 6 and 6 Plus, I think they've reached a good size. And essentially, they're just going to, for I think at least the next few generations, they're going to kind of hang out in our pocket and be just like a server for wearables. Like, they're just going to be this thing that you pull out when you have a bigger task, kind of like we used to do with laptops. And your phone's going to chill out in your pocket, and you're going to pull it out when you need to do something that has a little more heft. But otherwise, you're going to be interacting with your Apple Watch or your whatever or your little OS, like in her, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
I think that we'll have those on us, but we're really going to be interacting with smaller things that are more out of the way and not so prominent.
Which makes sense, because if people are clamoring for something smaller, maybe they're not realizing that something smaller may not be the one in your pocket. It's something on your wrist that you're interacting with.
I think that's Apple's idea of the future.
I mean, the other thing is yeah, Apple has invested a lot of manpower and time in the watch. So I'm sure they've taken resources away from the iPhone. And I don't know. I feel like the iPhone's kind of been on autopilot lately. You know, it has the same predictable, you know, new bot.
Since the 4.
Yeah, I mean, the 4S life cycle, the new body, the new, you know, outer shell every 2 years. I'm not saying that the stuff that they've been bringing in over the years hasn't been amazing, like Touch ID and Apple Pay. I feel like it's just tough to wow us these days when it comes to the iPhone, but who knows? Force Touch could bring a whole new dimension to how you interact with either games or, I mean, who knows?
If everything.
They bring a digital touch feature into it.
Well, I think more important than Force Touch is rose gold and space black.
Yeah, so rose gold. The
more analyst, color options.
The analyst predicted rose gold, which I never thought of that, but that would sell like hotcakes.
Well, I think so would a space black.
Oh, absolutely. Space black and rose gold would be the two constrained models.
For
whenever, if that's the case. But yeah, the space black is nice. Like the space black stainless steel Apple Watch, that thing is I don't even know if I've seen one in the wild yet, but from the photos online, it's a thing of beauty. The next thing, which I could see happening because they've stuck with the 8-megapixel camera since the iPhone 4S. He's predicting 12-megapixel camera. Now, Apple made a big thing about how increasing the megapixels is not what makes, you know, the camera better. And I feel like they would only increase the megapixels here if they figured out a different technology. And like we mentioned in a previous show, they purchased that company, Lynx, who specializes in these small sensors that give DSLR quality cameras. I would be very happy if they were able to incorporate that in time for the 6S. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be able to pull that off. Or maybe it's 2 6 megapixel cameras.
I mean, I guess really high res selfies. The next one on the list I found interesting because the iPhone has plenty of these now. Ming is suggesting that they're going to put yet another microphone on this iPhone to increase voice quality and have enhanced voice quality on calls. Now, currently, there are 3 microphones on the iPhone. There's the one on the bottom that everyone knows about that's been there since the original iPhone. There's one by the camera. And then the other one that not many people know is there because you cannot see it is behind the receiver ear, on the receiver of your iPhone on the earpiece so that when you're on speakerphone, it's another noise canceling mic. So this is interesting. A 4th microphone. I'm wondering where they'll place it. But I'm wondering if this is going to help with possibly some kind of. I'm wondering if this is going to help with some kind of like HD voice calling, which a couple carriers have carried in the past. Because that would be nice to have, you know, higher quality calls over the cellular network.
And I think a big change that if this is true will be very nice. So an A9, which we don't know what that will be other than a
the next
processor
they make. Yeah.
But 2 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, RAM, oh man. The iOS devices have been starved of RAM since the beginning, and it'd be nice to see more RAM. The only question remains is this RAM being added to support some kind of technology that we don't know about, and we're still going to have like the similar amount of RAM available to us at the OS, or are they kind of finally able to put this RAM in here and balance it out with battery life so that we got a snappier experience?
I think it's the former. I don't really think we're going to see a big performance gain other than the normal performance gains that we always get. But we won't have to worry about setting on it and bending it.
Oh, yeah. See, this prediction is one of those things where it's like, really, guy, you just read it. You just took one of the big scandals of last year and you may be making some stuff up. So, I guess we should have told our listeners, this guy made 11 predictions. So here's number 7. A stronger internal chassis so that the iPhone doesn't bend as easy. I feel like Apple would not do this because of Bendgate, because that really was very, very overblown. I feel like this would be more for, I don't know, impact if the iPhone drops. Which brings us to his 8th prediction, which is the weirdest prediction because he only isolates it to the 5.5 form factor, which is the plus form factor. They're saying that the plus might get a sapphire glass screen, but the regular 6, the 4.7 inch form factor will not. But they're saying that the reason either may not get it is because they've been doing a bunch of drop tests, and I guess the sapphire glass is in like limited quantities. It was a weird prediction, but nevertheless, 5.5 inch may get a sapphire screen. I guess that makes sense why they would give it to the bigger one first, because you have a better chance at dropping it. I don't know.
I guess it seems silly that they would only put it on one model.
I can't wait to revisit this, by the way, when in September, because I don't know. I'm not feeling strong about a lot of these predictions. I feel like a couple of these could be dead on, but I think some of these are kind of him just, you know, pulling things out of thin air. I mean, the next one's predictable, like, oh, better Touch ID.
Yeah, I feel like Touch ID is just now it's in the same group as the camera. It's like a new phone comes out. Of course, the camera's going to be, they're going to do something to the camera, and Touch ID is going to be better.
But do you really have any problems with Touch ID right now when you're six?
Nope.
If I get out of the shower complaints.
And my hands are like, you know, yeah, but wrinkled.
Everyone has that complaint. But other than that, I have zero complaints with Touch ID. It's been great. I've never had to retrain my finger mm-hmm. because it's, you know, not accurate anymore. And then the 10th prediction, gesture control. And that's a little vague because I'm curious as to what that means, because you could do like swipe gestures to go back on a lot of pages, and I'm wondering what gesture control means in this case. Do you have any ideas?
So I think it means one of two things. So the first thing is what you kind of just mentioned of gesture control, like swiping, which takes you back. I think they're going to run into a problem that they ran into with the Apple Watch and the trackpad in macOS of people just don't know all of these gestures because they're not necessarily intuitive. And then when they happen and they don't know why they did that, whether it being because they touched with two fingers or swiped up with four, they don't know why it happened. And so it's very confusing. So I hope that's not what they're talking about, because if they start adding gestures to a touchscreen kind of willy-nilly, I think it'll be very confusing as to what does what.
But they do – what's nice is they have the bigger screens to work with, so gestures are more reasonable to do on a 4.7 and a 5.5. That, like, imagine doing gestures on the original 3.5-inch display.
Yeah.
Like, say – I'm talking about, like, multi-finger gestures.
I think there was a jailbreak for that.
Oh, I'm sure there was. But I think that they have a, you know, a bigger landscape to work with. And then last but not least, the most easiest one to predict, like, I don't know, Cody, I feel like,
I don't,
Cody, can I become an analyst?
Can go on the list.
Can someone just hire me as an analyst? Because I want to know what these analysts make per year, because it seems like a very easy job. The last prediction is that production will start in mid to late August. Like, duh.
Production will start at a time before it's released, which has been in September.
Yeah, so, but let's go with August. The last couple iPhones have come out in September. Like seriously, someone hire me as an analyst. I will predict these things for you. So that wraps up this prediction list. I think that, like I said, some hits, some misses. Look forward to revisiting it. So Cody, you have something to say about the Apple TV.
So just before we wrap up, Joe, last night I wanted to watch a movie, and it wasn't available on Netflix, and it wasn't available on Hulu, and it wasn't available on HBO. I was like, well, you know what? I really like this movie, Best in Show. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Who's in that?
Jane Lynch is in it, and
is it about a dog, like Best in Show?
It's a comedy about all these people who are like in a dog show. If you've never watched it, you need to watch
it. No, I like Jane Lynch, so I'll have to give that a shot.
Well, yeah, so you definitely need to watch it. It's an amazing movie. But so I wanted to watch it, and it wasn't available for streaming. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to buy it because I really like this movie. I go to iTunes and I go to search, and then this is all on the Apple TV. And so I have to go down, down, you know, B over, over, E, dot, 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 and like 700 clicks to type in Best In before it finally came up on the suggestions. And then I clicked it and I purchased it. And then as soon as I hit buy, I realized, I was like, you know, it's sad. It probably would have been faster for me to pick up my iPhone, go to the iTunes store, type Best in Show, search for it, buy it on my phone, and then on the Apple TV, just go to purchases.
Oh, man, that's
how
so
ridiculous
true.
Is that?
And I think this is this is what, you know, what they need to address. And we were talking about it last episode with this new remote. They need to address the input methods when it comes to the Apple TV, because it is embarrassing. The amount of hunting and pecking that you have to do with that remote. It's just annoying.
That's my rant, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, We didn't mention the show notes, Cody. We need to mention these show notes earlier. I mean, who knows? Listeners may have dropped off already. But if they wanted to get to our show notes, Cody, where would our listeners go?
Diagnosticsandusage.com/17.
Fantastic. And if you're in a modern podcast app, I'm sure you can find those links in there. And Cody, if people wanted to follow you on Twitter and interact with you, what is your handle?
At CP Coates. What about you, Joe?
I am at Joe Caiati, C-A-I-A-T-I, and I write at joecaiati.info. We will talk to you all soon. Cody, you have a great night.
Bye.